If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pull up a stool and join us. 585-866-4FAN. 866-4326. The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.
Fresh from a memorable Monday night in Orchard Park, covering the Buffalo Bills for the Syracuse Post-Standard, Syracuse.com. Our buddy Matt Perino stops in for his usual Tuesday afternoon check-in. And Matt, after last night, I don't know that I would say that the Bills are the best team in the NFL. It's a week-by-week league, and I feel like that changes on a week-by-week basis. But as of right now, I don't know that there's a team in the NFL that has better vibes around them than the Buffalo Bills. They certainly feel like that they are the best team in terms of good spirit and vibes right now.
Yeah, and I think like it's a continuation of last season. It's something that, like, I don't know if we spent enough time this offseason talking and diving into this, and maybe we have. I mean, we had 9 months to talk about it. It probably came up on some show or some podcast or some radio spot. But, like, the Bills were so good when they made the shift over to Joe Brady last year down the stretch. I mean, if you think about it, in the regular season, they're 9-1 now with him at the helm, and the way that they found ways to reinvent themselves last year, I think that that was a big reason why I was still so bullish on this team being so good. And the other piece of it too, Bobby Babich has been really good, right? Like, they've had two straight games where they take, you know, top tier quarterbacks, or at least quarterbacks who should be top tier. We were going over it on the show last night. The first three quarterbacks the Bills have faced all ranked top 10 in the NFL in average annual salary. I mean, these guys that teams that have paid, and whether or not that was a good decision, we can probably talk about that. But Bobby Babich is doing a good job getting this team at all three levels ready to play, and it's allowing Sean McDermott, I think, to settle back into running this team at a 30,000-foot view, and I think that's good for everybody involved. And I think, you know, Joe Brady, the determination to be a physical, run-oriented team, that's something 3 years ago that I think people scoffed at when, you know, Brian Daboll talked about it and there was this idea that maybe Sean McDermott was overstepping. I think Sean McDermott, you know, maybe was a little bit ahead of things, wanting to create a dual-threat offense, not only to have a running game that you can lean on, but also allow Josh Allen to operate in the space that he has throughout the first three games of the season. I mean, it's no coincidence that they're running the ball the way that they are, and he's been so efficient with the ball in his hands as a passer. I think it all kind of comes together, and you're right. Like, the vibes around this team right now, dating back to when we, you know, unpacked our cars and loaded into the dorms at St. John Fisher, have been off the charts positive.
Yeah, Matt, the one thing with Allen, we always know that he can make plays from every angle, certainly physically gifted, but just his decision-making, if you can talk about that. And there's one play in particular last night where, you know, the Bills are driving. They're driving toward the press box end of the field, and there's Josh Allen running inside the 10, and he could have made a decision to lower the shoulder, maybe take on a defender, and, you know what, I'm just going to slide here. We're just going to have another down. They eventually punch it in anyways. Like, what has changed for Allen in that regard, where this is everything that Bills fans would have been hoping for? That, hey, if you took what you saw physically and with the decision-making, I think this is just about as much as you could hope for here, Matt.
Yeah, I think actually the last two games, it's weird. Like, you don't want to be dealing with an injury, but I wonder how much that injured left hand has maybe even made him more hyper aware of being safe as he can be when he does leave the pocket and not putting himself in a spot to take extra hits or to put that hand in jeopardy. I mean, it's obviously something that's still bothering him to the extent that he's doing right-handed,
yeah,
backhanded handoffs in the game. He doesn't even want to hand the ball off with that left hand. So that's something that I think is a part of it. But also, if you go back to last season, when Joe Brady, the first few press conferences, he was emphasizing over and over again, my goal is to get Josh Allen to embrace being bored when he's back there, taking the checkdowns, not always trying to do everything on every play. And honestly, I think that that was a year-long process, or almost a year-long process, that we're now just starting to see the fruits of the labor. And it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to practice it, to execute it, and have it become who you are. And we're seeing there's still big-time plays to be made. And as Josh Allen becomes this lethal short and intermediate area quarterback, I think the deep part of the field is going to open up even more, especially as some of the guys that haven't really gotten themselves really asserted into this offense yet. I think of a guy like Curtis Samuel, who I thought could be a bit more of a weapon down the field, maybe even like a Dawson Knox, or, you know, he's kind of been an afterthought through the first three games of the season. MVS has had a couple of targets. Thought he kind of had a borderline drop yesterday. It was a tough play. But, you know, when you have those opportunities, when you see Khalil Shakir through three games, 14 targets and 14 catches, you want Valdes-Scantling to come away with that. So I think there's opportunities to scale it up in certain spots. And you're going to have to be different week to week. You know, you guys were talking going into the break about, you know, it's about to get a lot tougher. I mean, they're going to go on the road three straight weeks against three really good football teams, in the Ravens, the Texans, and then the Jets. And so they're going to be tested. All three of those defenses are really good. I think they're facing probably the worst of the bunch this weekend. That's how good I think the Jets and the Texans defenses are. But on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, it is going to be an absolute physical game. They're already down two starters on defense. You start to kind of look through this thing, three if you count Matt Milano, I guess. How does this thing shape up? And, you know, can Baylen Spector step up after what I think was a little minor step back after a really good game against Miami, coming in for Bernard? You know, he's going to have to be a big piece of what they do. Luckily for him, Dorian Williams is playing at a high level, especially in coverage, guys. I mean, that 84.4 coverage grade, I mean, Tyrell Dotson only had two games last season where he put up over an 84 grade in coverage in a game. And that's what they needed. They needed a guy to come and fill in for Matt Milano and do a little bit of what Tyrell Dotson did in coverage for them, which was totally unexpected. And I think Williams has played really well, especially this last game.
Matt, I want to go back to the left hand injury for Josh Allen and give a little bit of shine to the offensive line up front, because last night Allen, you know, didn't get sacked once. I don't think he got hit in the Miami game once either. I mean, these guys are mauling, whether it's pass protection for Allen. And I wonder if how much of that left hand is like, hey, guys, keep me protected because I don't want to take a hit. Because the left hand, you're not doing backhanded handoffs unless that left hand is bothering. Like, we don't know the extent or the severity of that injury, and it's not affecting his game, luckily. But that offensive line has just been amazing at protecting him the last couple of weeks.
I mean, all the way across the board, and you have another, like, you know, situation similar to Ed Oliver. You know, you remember when he got that extension and we were talking about, okay, was this a little bit too early? Is he going to live up to this contract? Then he goes out last season, has 9.5 sacks, and he probably left a little bit out there. You probably would have liked a little bit more. But if you want to talk about a guy that had an impact as a pass rusher, somebody that you could rely upon in the run game and is still kind of arrow up, that was a really good contract. And now you look at those contracts, and he's fallen all the way outside of the top 10, I believe there, at least maybe he's on the fringe there. And that's huge. And you look at Spencer Brown, I think that deal, when you look at it, I think he comes in at number 8 AAV for right tackles. That is going to get, you know, blown up over the next, like, 12 months to 16 months. And Spencer Brown's been arguably the best pass-blocking offensive lineman in all of football through the first 3 weeks of the season. I mean, think back to that summer when we were talking about the future is like, can Spencer Brown get over this back injury? Is this going to be a long-term thing? Is he ever going to be relied upon as a full-time starter? And the Bills had this belief in him over and over and over again. He has, I think it was 35 pass rush snaps yesterday without allowing a pressure. He hasn't allowed a single pressure all season long. He's been as good as anybody in the league, and we know what Deion Dawkins brings you every week. There's a lot of concern about David Edwards. He's been really consistent, and Connor McGovern has flipped over to center and been absolutely great in front of Josh Allen. And Torrance had a little bit of a slow start, but I thought he really bounced back this week, especially in pass pro. He was the highest graded guy on Pro Football Focus this week. I haven't gone back and watched the whole game yet, but what I did watch, I was zeroing in on Torrance a little bit, and it looks like he's more comfortable. He's settling in a little bit more. It'll get tougher, like I mentioned. you know, Quinnen Williams on the schedule in a couple weeks. I mean, Torrent, all eyes will be on Torrent and Edwards and McGovern, but so far, so good.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we're talking to Matt Perino, Syracuse Post Standard. The Shout Podcast is a lot of fun, shorter week. Baltimore, they were the number one seed last year in the AFC Championship game at home. Matt, is this a game where, gosh, the backups here have been playing so well for Buffalo, Baylen Specter and Cam Lewis and Jamarcus Ingram, and you mentioned Dorian Williams, but is that the fear this week that as good as they've been playing, seeing a read option potentially of Henry and Lamar here might be just too much?
You know, I don't think it'll be too much. I think Sean McDermott historically has been really good against Lamar, and, you know, they had some success early, and I think that, you know, it's an adjustment-driven league, and I think Sean McDermott is as good as any coach in the league at adjusting. So if it doesn't go well early on in the game, I think he figures out a way to maybe change things up a little bit. We saw this last week, Baltimore get out to that big lead, and you think that they're just going to boat race Dallas, and all of a sudden in the last drive, they have a chance to kind of come back and maybe win that game. And so this is a Baltimore team that has its own kind of issues. I think Zay Flowers is an excellent player, a real ascending wide receiver, young rising star. Problem is, he's going up against a team that features maybe the best cornerback duo in the NFL right now, for my money. I mean, Christian Benford, he looks like a superstar, guys. I mean, quarterbacks are not even testing him, and when they do, it looks absolutely scary for that team. And there was one throw that Lawrence had in that game yesterday. I think it was to Brian Thomas Jr. on the outside, and I think the only reason Benford didn't pick that off is because when he went to jump, he kind of like slipped on his back leg a little bit. He's as good as it gets. So I think from a passing perspective, there's potential for them to struggle. I'll be interested to see how the Bills, you know, how they deploy their talent in this game on the defensive side in the front seven. They've leaned on that dime package. Do you want to do that in the run game and lean on Cam Lewis now in that slot spot? I almost think Jamarcus Ingram is a little bit better of a tackler than Lewis just because of his size. I wonder if we don't see a little bit more of a split there, even on non-dime looks. Maybe getting Ingram in as that third hybrid linebacker, if you will, just because he's been so good in coverage, and I think he's a little bit more physical in the box. Not more physical. Cam Lewis is very physical too, but I just think that, like, as a secure tackler because of his size, gives him a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah, I want to conjure up an image of Taron Johnson running back a pick six in a playoff game, and I'm curious, Matt, if we have any insight as to when he or Bernard may be available again. They made the decision not to put these guys on IR, and that would have cost them at least four games. But we're getting up on that four-week threshold. Any updates? Are we hearing anything about either of their returns?
We are going to hear from Sean McDermott in about an hour and 20 minutes. So that'll be our first big update on Taron. I am not very bullish on him. I mean, I've gotten a lot of questions about this, DMs, the insider text line, like, what are we thinking about the possibility of Baltimore, Taron Johnson making his return? A, the Bills are notorious for not rushing guys back. And B, I just don't think where they ruled him out, and he hasn't practiced yet at all, to get him back on a maybe a limited basis in a walkthrough on Wednesday and then two quick practices Thursday and Friday before a road game against the Baltimore Ravens, the defending number one seeds, like you mentioned, I just think that's a little bit too quick of a timeline. But we don't have a true update on him. He was walking around in the locker room yesterday, looked pretty good, looked in good spirits from what I noticed. But my guess is still that, you know, the goal to me is probably more Houston than it is Baltimore. But, you know, crazy things have happened before.
Yeah. Is Von Miller in a good spot here to make all these incentives? When he redid the contract, I'm thinking, well, he's doing the team a solid by not. I don't think it's a crazy question now to ask what we've seen here out of the first three games.
Yeah, I mean, he might. It's so far so good. I think that he's had some advantageous matchups in the first three games, and I'm not downplaying his start because he has been really good. But, I mean, if you want to talk about the weakness of these three teams that they started with, I mean, you could point to the offensive line and you could point to the tackles. I think both of these teams, Austin Jackson a couple of weeks ago, just looked like he couldn't do anything to figure out how to stop somebody. I thought the tackles, Cam Robinson, they gave a load of money to that guy, and he was a turnstile, no matter who was rushing against him. I think A.J. Epinesa gave him the business in the third quarter. So, listen, it's all great things for Von Miller. The way that he started the season, the fact that he has three sacks, the fact that he's getting really good pressure. He looks like he's – that quickness and that speed and that burst is back. But I'm also not going to sit here and say that, you know, overreact to a three-game stretch because we just – it's too much. He's older. He's fresh. How does his body hold up throughout the course of the season? I'm not all the way there yet, but I will say, I really thought throughout the summer it was a weird vibe around Von. Like his general tone, demeanor. He's always this happy-go-lucky, everything's positive, and he just seemed down in the dumps. Like almost like he, in hindsight, maybe just like, you know, hiding in the weeds, waiting for his chance to kind of just announce his return to relevance. And he's started to come back out of his shell a little bit. The positivity is there. So I think that's a good thing that you're seeing a guy that feels like he's back. The confidence seems to be there, but still a long season to go.
Couple of things on Von. He was wearing the autographed cap again on the sideline.
Oh, was he?
He was wearing it again, man. I know I brought it up last week. And also, this was reported when he signed when he restructured his deal, that the idea that he is going to get incentives for stacking sacks throughout the course of the season. I mean, right now he's earned at least $1 million in incentives with his two sacks. He'll get another sack and that'll push him up to at least $2.5 million if he gets to four sacks. And again, I'm kind of like watching this through the course of the season and saying to myself, Von's going to try and get that money by doing what he does best. And through three games, he's done it well.
Yeah. And I mean, he's going to look for his chances to cash in for sure. And I think that if it ends up happening for the Bills, then it's in, you know, late game situations, important situations. I mean, all the better. I mean, that sack against Arizona was huge. I wouldn't argue that the sack against Miami was super impactful from, you know, shutting them down and holding them down. I mean, their offense couldn't do anything even before Tua was injured. But again, he was signed to be a second half, fourth quarter closer. And if you can get a guy in that spot with what it looks like you're getting from Rousseau and Epinesa to fill that role once again, that's huge. And guys, I don't want to overreact and be hyperbolic about 14 snaps in garbage time against a bad team, a very bad team, but Javon Solomon looked like the real deal. That looked like everything we saw in the summer at Fisher. You know, winning one-on-ones, you didn't want to overreact because it was against, you know, second-teamers, third-teamers, but he was flying around out there, and I think they could do some really creative things. I think he was always the plan to get him in the mix, and I wonder how much we see his role kind of ratchet up a little bit over the next couple of weeks, and he could be, you know, they're going to really rely on Smoot, Epinesa, Rousseau to set the edge against Lamar this weekend. I don't know if this is necessarily the matchup where you truly see if Solomon can make an impact earlier in the game. But yeah, that was some really good stuff out of him.
Last one for me, Matt, and for everybody that was not at the game last night, what was that stadium like when Hamlin makes the interception? The idea that this has now come full circle. You can even say, wait a second, he's playing at a better level right now, you could argue, Matt, than he ever has in this league.
I push back a little bit on that. And because I think we don't remember the good parts of his season before the injury. There were some really bad moments. Like, we've talked about this before. There were some moments where you're like, man, Micah Hyde's got to get back, or they got to figure out a different plan. But there are also some games where I thought, wait a second, there might be some things to build on here. I remember early in Taron Johnson's career, we don't talk enough about this on his arc, he was benched. He was benched for Cam Lewis a couple starts into his career, and people were wondering if he was ever going to get the job back. And luckily for him, Lewis got hurt. He goes back in the game and never relinquishes the job again. But I think that was a learning experience. He's a former sixth-round pick. He's not had a ton of action, you know, at safety because Hyde and Poyer were here. That was his big sample size. So the fact that he's playing really good football, the thing that's really stood out to me, too, is his willingness as a tackler. I mean, that penalty that he had in that game yesterday, he put a thud on the – I can't remember who it was now. Might have been Christian Kirk. But, man, he came flying to the ball and really met him with physicality. And those were always going to be the plays that you were like, man, when he's in those moments, when he's got a guy coming across the middle or he's got to close in on a guy in open space and really lay the boom as a safety, what's the mental part of it? And he's shown literally zero fear or holding back or reservations. That to me is like such a cool feeling. You ask what it was like in the building. It was a celebration from the beginning to the end because they started scoring right away. But it was just a little bit extra special when you realize that was number three and you look down on the sideline and he's coming off. And usually guys will just kind of run through a line, dap up everybody, but it's almost like Hamlin's dapping up everybody. And as he's going to the bench, everybody that didn't get a dap was following him behind him to try to get an embrace or a high five or a hug. It was just a cool moment, and having it be on Monday Night Football on national TV for everybody to kind of celebrate it, that was pretty sweet.
And Matt, one last one, all's well that ends well, because he ends up getting his first NFL touchdown. Is there anything to the benching of Keon Coleman, who we didn't see early in the game yesterday?
You know what? I think that's really interesting across the board. I think the first piece of it was, number one, how open Sean McDermott was about it. Like, almost like, okay, he was late to something. He was publicly reprimanded for it. You know, it kind of feels, and I don't want to put anything on them, but it almost feels like you're going to do it our way or there's going to be consequences. And it never felt like, really, I know there's a completely different situation. This is a rookie 21-year-old kid. Stephon Diggs was a $25, $28 million a year guy. But it never felt like there was ever consequences the Bills can levy against that guy, right? Like, because he was larger than life. He was the offense for a long time. You know, you're paying him all this money. And I almost feel like Sean McDermott, the part of the organizational shift has been to say, no, we're going to be a team first, no matter what. And if you don't fall into that, there's going to be consequences. And I think I also like the fact that Sean came out and said, yeah, we handled it. We gave a punishment, but we're also using this as a learning experience because through it, Keon realized how important it is to be there for his teammates. And I thought it was interesting that he also used that specific quote to talk about the situation. Then you see Coleman on the sideline. I got the binoculars out watching him down there. And he is like a caged animal ready to get out onto that field. And when he gets out there, man, four plays into it, he finds a way to get that touchdown. So who knows? Maybe that's the kind of thing. After going 91% of the snaps in Miami without a catch, maybe this unlocks Keon a little bit in a very important time. I'd expect him to be a big part of things next week.
Short week here, Matt, as tomorrow back at practice. And what does that mean in terms of the shoutcast and things you got coming up here in Syracuse.com we can check out?
Yeah, so we're going to be covered with pretty much content out the wazoo this week. We'll have a I'm hanging out with Trey Wingo tomorrow.
No kidding.
That'll be cool. Doing a little bit of a podcast with him. So that'll be up later this week. Then we got the live show on Wednesday. As always, they're doing a walkthrough tomorrow. So it'll be a little bit different. We won't see practice. And then we'll have our official preview show probably Friday or Saturday. I'll be down in Baltimore on Saturday night. And then it's party time, another primetime game. This is the grind, boys. Like, this is the prime time early season grind, but we are we got flowers and sunshine on the other side of this thing because we got a lot of 1 o'clock games in the second half.
Now, did you say that Miller? You asked Miller about wearing the autograph merch because I think
it's such a
power move. I think he's starting a trend, and I'm all in. I'm about to start wearing some of my own autograph merch as well, just to follow suit.
So you have autograph merch?
No, I will autograph my own ball caps.
You're just going to sign some stuff now and just start to follow the trend.
Yeah, just I think it's such a power move. I think he's starting a trend, and I'm willing to follow him lockstep. I think it's amazing.
Can you guys both sign a station hat? Send that to me, and I'll actually wear Dangers on the Shout podcast. I'll probably give Gino's away to like some of the kids on the street or something. But just send it along. We'll see what we can do.
Step one is getting a station ball cap. Let's see what we can wrangle up in our budget, Matt. We appreciate you bringing that up. Dude, thanks for everything, man. Appreciate the time, as always. Great job covering the team, and we'll be following along this week. Take care, guys. There he is, Matt Parrino, Syracuse.com, and the Shout podcast. Worth checking out here if you're a Bills fan throughout the course of the week.
He's mentioning all these 1 o'clocks. No, there's flex scheduling. Like, I don't know what these 1 o'clock games he's talking about. The Dolphins will be one, the Colts and the Titans, but you've got games in Seattle, Detroit, the Chiefs, the Rams.
It's
4 o'clock.
Yeah, we're excited now through 3 weeks of the NFL season, right? You forget, like, this is a marathon. It's a roller coaster ride, and it's a marathon. It goes on and on and on. So where you might be the toast of the town after week three, you watch out. I mean, it can change really quickly around here.
Nobody's winning anything in September, but you can fall out of it, though. And when I saw out of Jacksonville, a team that had everything to kind of play for and say everything is right, you're now 0-3.
Cooked.
Yeah, they're done.
Bengals, cooked. Cooked. Bad vibes. Really, really bad. We got some takes coming up. We've got Michael F. Florio. We'll talk some fantasy football in the 4 o'clock hour as well. We have time for your calls. If you want to join us, feel free. 866-4326, 585-866-4FAN.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.